You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. I hope you're having a great week, weekend. Whenever you're listening to this, I hope you're subscribed. And if this is your first episode because you're a Maggie Lawson fan, which we all are, I hope you'll subscribe and listen every week because we've got a lot of great guests coming up and have had a lot of great guests. And we really get into it. We talk about life and anxiety and stress and work and just real stuff. We don't bullshit too much here. We have fun, but we don't bullshit too much. And I have a new segment. We have a new segment here on the show called How You Doing?
How you doing?
It's a mental health segment. Just how you doing? It's just how you freaking doing? How are you guys doing out there? Have you had a stressful week? Are you worried about something? Are you not being good to yourself? What is it? Ryan, how are you doing?
How am I doing?
How you doing?
We recorded a lot this week, so that was fun. But at the same time, I had to go home and do my other work.
Right.
So it has been a little bit stressful.
Right. That's true. But we do have weeks off where we don't do anything really.
Well, we had a lot of weeks off.
We did. I didn't do podcasts for a while because we had a lot with what they call it in the can.
In the can.
But you're saying it was stressful. All of a sudden there's five. You're here every day. We're doing all these podcasts. You got to get them uploaded.
Mm-hmm.
So it is stress. And it's stress for me too because I hadn't done them in a while. So I was like, oh shit, do I still have it? It's like not acting in a while. And then you just go, can I still act? And I found out that I could still do it. I could still do it. We had some really great interviews and I've been a little stressed. I've been, worried about things and, but I try to, and I think to myself, why are you feeling this way? Well, you haven't really exercised this week. Oh, go figure. You're drinking, you're eating like shit. Oh, so there's reasons behind everything. And so for me, I'm just like trying to get back on track, trying to eat better, trying to stay off the sodas. Staying off the Carvel ice cream sandwich flying saucers.
Oh my God, what are you, 10? Got to stay off the pop of the ice cream.
That's a trick question, my friend. how are you doing, guys? I hope you're doing well out there. I hope you're hanging in there. I know we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel here with the pandemic, and I hope you guys are being responsible and good to yourselves and loving yourselves. So that's how you doing. So we just checked in with me and Ryan and checking in with you. We're also going to check in eventually with the guests, even though this was pre-recorded. So
yeah,
we can't do that.
It's a new segment.
If you want to subscribe to the podcast, it's easy. You just go to the on YouTube, Ryan.
YouTube.com/InsideOfYouWithMichaelRosenbaum. Baum.
That's correct. And you can go on Apple. You can go on Spotify, Stitcher. Mm-hmm. What else? There's all sorts of things. Apple.
Yeah.
You can listen to the show, watch it on YouTube. I think you'll enjoy it if you watch it on YouTube. And spread the word. We really encourage you to spread the word. The handles on Instagram are at Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook and at Inside of You Pod on the Twitter. You could also go to the merch store, the Inside of You online store, and you can get not only Inside of You mugs, autograph mugs, hats, but you can get Smallville stuff. You can get a Smallville lunchbox. I think I have some Funko Pop Lex Luthor's left. Some Lex Luthor pictures, just a bunch of stuff. It's a fun little site, Inside of You online store. And if you'd like anything from the band, my band Sunspin, go to sunspin.com and you could buy shirts, hats. You can get Zooms with me and Rob. You could book the band. You could do all that stuff. But we got a lot of great merch and you could do that. This guest, Maggie, is such a sweetheart. And I talked to her co-stars from Psych and they adored her. So I always wanted to get her on the podcast and, she's not like me where she just is an open book. She likes to kind of keep things close to the vest. And so I get it. I understand it, but she did open up. She talked about her divorce. She talked about life. She talked about Psych. She talked about a lot of things and it was really interesting. And she's a very likable person. Wouldn't you say?
I would agree.
I mean, I thought this girl's marriage material. That's what I was thinking. Sometimes my guess, I'm like, wow, this girl's awesome. This woman is awesome. Not this girl. This woman is awesome. She is. She's really great. What did you find most interesting about her?
I mean, she's just super nice. And it was nice for her to open up about a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I like when people open up. You know how I like that.
Yeah.
Let's just get right into it. Oh, by the way, before we get into it, make sure you join Patreon. Patreon.com/InsideOfYou. I'll write you a message. It's a great big family. If you want to help the podcast in other ways, if you're really digging it, you want to give to the podcast, fine. If you just don't, that's fine too. But Patreon, patreon.com/InsideOfYou. And let's get inside of Maggie Lawson.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Okay, first of all,
hi.
Maggie Lawson. Margaret?
Margaret, that is my...
Marge? Is my, Marge?
Margaret Cassidy Lawson. Did you say Marge?
Have you ever heard Marge?
Yeah, but I've never been called that.
Do you remember in Pee-wee's Big Adventure when he says, tell him the large Marge sent you? You never got that shit in high school?
Never got that shit in high school.
Thank God. That would be terrible.
No. I always said if like I became a doctor, a lawyer or something, I might go by like Dr. Margaret. But
Margaret Lawson.
You know, I want to congratulate you. I've never done a pre-interview before. And you're the first.
Well, you know, sometimes you got to do a pre-interview.
Yeah, sometimes you got to just.
Look, I get, thank you, by the way, for doing that. Just because I get, I get a lot of anxiety talking about myself. You can probably already sense it. So.
Well, that's probably good in a way because you're not so self-involved, maybe. Is that true?
I don't know. I think I'm just painfully private.
Really?
Until today.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I'm very social and I like being out. I like, you know, I like being with people and I like sharing, but I'm also, very, 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 very private.
Were your folks private?
You know, yes and no. I mean, I think in our family, actually, no, when I think about it, there was a lot of like very open talking, very open feeling talking. So I'm not really sure where it comes from. It's really interesting. Like it's something that has sort of developed later. Because when I was younger, I was such a like, I was doing musical theater, I was singing, I was dancing, I was acting, I was like, you know, I was pretty out there. But as I got older, I don't know, I've been working on this. It's like I'm really comfortable when I have lines and a character to play, but I get really uncomfortable if I'm just, not uncomfortable, it's probably not the right word, but just, I just get really anxious when I just have to.
That's normal. I think a lot of people get like that. You said something a minute ago. You said there was a lot of open feelings in your family. What does that mean, open feelings? It was like, I love you, Margaret. I love you too, Mom. What was that?
No, but I guess what I'm trying to say, like there really wasn't like a moment or a thing. You know, I remember when I say open feelings, I just feel like all topics were sort of up for discussion. Like there was nothing off limits. So my mom was always so great about that. Like she was such a, I could literally come home from school and ask her a question about anything.
Sex?
I could literally walk in the door and be like, hey, I heard this word orgasm today. What is that? And she would do her best to sort of scientifically explain what that is in a way that I, at 9 years old or 8 years old or whatever, could understand.
How would she do it? How would she put that? I remember in health class, we had health class in seventh grade and you had to take it. And I didn't know what was going on. In fact, I didn't get laid till many, many moons later. And I remember that my mom asked me something. Now, my parents had a different way of raising their children. They would humiliate them.
Oh.
My dad, mom was like, what did you learn in health? It's like, I know what's going on. And they're like, what do you mean? I go, sex. And she's like, what about it? I'm like, a man and a woman, they have sex and the guy has an organism. And she goes, and she started laughing at me and I ran upstairs and she, heard her friend telling her friends organism. He said, organism, isn't that the cutest?
Oh, that's so,
but it was very private. It was very private in my family. Like I never saw my dad. I never saw my mom naked or my dad. I saw my mom's boobs once by accident, but I never, you know, everything was private. It was really weird. One time I saw my dad's balls and it was like, it ruined me. And
sorry.
Well, he got upset. He was like, I remember we're sitting there watching TV and I just turned and he was wearing these little blue shorts because he went swimming. I go, Dad, I think your ball's hanging out of your pants. He goes, what? You're a pig. Get out of here. Get out of the room. Go upstairs to your room. Like, what? I'm in trouble because your balls are hanging out of your shorts. But that's what I remember. So my family was different.
Shut down. Yeah.
But your family, you could talk about orgasms. You could talk about anything with your mother, not so much your father.
Well, yeah, I think my mom sort of took the lead on most of that stuff. For sure. She was like, it's interesting. We weren't like a super affectionate family. Like, it wasn't in a way of like physical touch or a lot of I love yous or any of that. But there was this like openness about what could be put on the table and up for discussion, which I have friends now who have kids, and they'll call and they'll be like, oh my God, like he's asking me about sex, or he's asking me. I'm like, I don't know if this is the right way, but I know I greatly appreciated it. It's like, just be direct and as honest as you can be. My mom, I don't know, she probably said, you know, it's a really excited feeling and something happens. And, but it was never like talking down to or being condescending. It was always like, just on the level, you can handle it, trusting me with the information. And so it created like that's what I think I mean in like this sort of sense of openness. Like, my mom was so, so good about like not being shocked at a question or something, like great in a crisis.
Wow. Now, was she like very protective in high school, like teaching you about sex and saying, hey, I don't want you having sex? Or was she like, it wasn't a religious family. They were more like open, like they knew you were going to have sex. Use a condom, sweetheart.
No, it wasn't necessarily like that. I have two brothers, and it was a bit, I think she, because and by the time I was in high school, my parents were divorced, and I think she really tried to protect me even more so than my brothers. Like, they could get away with a lot more. And yes, I think more of the, I won't say it was it was more like expected, like whether it was getting in trouble or like, I was such a responsible mom like figure in high school.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I was always the designated driver, or yeah. And I was, so for me, what I wanted to, like, I'd already started acting. I already kind of knew what I wanted to do. So for me, the idea of like possibly having something come up, such as, you know, my mom was just great at putting all the risks on the table around sex. So it scared the shit out of me, to the point where it's like, I cannot mess this train. I can't mess up this train I'm on right now. So, and that was all sort of like career driven, even in high school. So she knew exactly what to say to scare the living shit out of me into never doing that.
She mentioned the herb.
So it wasn't really anything that was like a possibility. I know she would have been great if something had happened, or if I, you know, all that, but like, no, I think it was just sort of, that's off limits. If I want to go do this, that risk can't be at play.
So you were a good girl. You were the one, the designated driver. You were were you a cheerleader in high school? You're popular.
No, I mean, I was not a cheerleader. No. I was already doing plays and sort of, you know, it's really interesting. I came out to LA my sophomore year of high school.
What?
It's so wild.
Wait a minute. As a sophomore in high school, I mean, I didn't even start puberty till late, like probably 14 or 15 years old. I'm so immature as a 48-year-old dude that if I go back to then, it was a timing thing. I think everything kind of fit. Like I didn't become really successful till, you know, I was in my mid-20s, which was even early for me. I was very immature. So I can't imagine being a sophomore in high school coming out from Louisville, Kentucky, and starting an acting career. So your parents both approved of your acting, and your mom took you out?
Yeah, it's such a wild story.
Tell me the wildest story.
The wildest story. Well, you know, it went back years, actually, to when I was like, I think I was 12. Do you remember showcases? Do you remember the showcases that used to happen?
Yep. Yeah.
There was one that happened in Louisville, and I went and I met, these showcases were these weird things I think you paid to go to. And there would be like agents from Hollywood, maybe casting directors, producers, or whatever. So you got this opportunity to go to this seminar and learn about LA and Hollywood, and maybe read a scene, and they'd give you feedback on whether or not you like have it, So, right. I'm 12. I don't know any better. I've been doing plays for a few years. And I did this, I hosted a little show, but we'll get into that. That's another thing. But I hosted this little show on a Fox station in Kentucky. And everybody was like, oh, you should go to this seminar and see what they say, you know, or whatever, if there's a chance to become a star. So I go to the seminar, I read the scenes, I'm 12 years old. I'm like, okay, this is fine. And I get like a lot of feedback from these people. This guy gives me his card. I'll get to him in a second. I don't think anything of it. My mom and I, we have this discussion. Now, keep in mind, we don't have like money. This is not a situation where it was like, sure, we can go to New York and see about a career. That's actually the first place we went, but or LA. This was like, it felt impossible, but these things kind of popped up that made us talk about it. So I get this card. I have this real discussion with my mom and dad, and it's like, no, man, I'm a kid and I want to be a kid and I don't want to do that. And I like my life here in Kentucky and I like my plays and what I'm doing. And so we just dropped it. And a couple of years later, I'm doing a play, and the director of the play was this guy, John Huffman, who had done a lot of work in LA. Like, I knew he went back and forth and he had a lot of like connections, great, great director and was a great friend. And I tell him this story about this showcase I went to a few years prior. And I tell him about this guy who gave me his card. And I'm like, he's like, do you know, I said, it was an agent. And he's like, do you know who the agent was? And I said, yeah, I think. And I get the card. I'll never forget. My mom kept the card for years in her metallic gold cigarette holder. And it was like, it had this like clear little thing on it. And it always, I don't know why, she just kept it for safekeeping. I don't know why we even kept this card.
Well, probably because at that point, it was a moment where my daughter's talented and this agent gave her his card. And it was a moment. She didn't know that you'd be as successful as you were. So maybe yeah. She kept it around. It was one of the first mementos or whatever.
So John looks at the card and he's like, do you know who this is? I'm like, no. And he's like, this is like one of the biggest agents. This guy, Jeff Witches, who still, I believe, is an agent at William Morris. And he loses his mind. I have no idea what any of this means. And he's like, you should call him. He's like, you should call him. If an agent from William Morris gives you his card, you should call him. And so I make this phone call one day. At now, I think I'm 14, 15.
Oh, boy.
And this woman at William Morris picks up. And you know, I say, can I please have Jeff Witch's office? And somehow, I get through to him. And I tell him the story. I'm like, hi, my name's Maggie Lawson. You gave me your card 3 years ago at a showcase in Louisville, Kentucky, and said if I ever came to LA to call you, you'd take a meeting with me. And he was like, okay, well, if I said I'd take a meeting, I'll take a meeting. When are you coming? And that sort of put the wheels in motion for, I didn't realize that was just a meeting. I didn't know what any of it meant. I just knew I had a lot of people around me telling me this was a really big deal. And so I was like, oh, I guess we should take this seriously. So we start making the plans to come out here. While we were doing it, this is just a side part of the story that's very, very funny. My little brother reads this article about, they're doing a Clueless TV series and they were looking for Alicia Silverstone lookalikes.
Well,
my brother's like, Maggie, you gotta go. Like, you're gonna get this. You gotta go. So we now have in our heads that I have to get to LA or at least get myself somehow auditioning for this series because we just didn't know any better. And I have this meeting if I want it with this guy at William Morris. And I took, it was, I believe, my sophomore year spring break, every single penny we had. And my mom and I came out and I met him and I met, a guy in an elevator. I'll never forget it. And I'm forgetting his name, but he said he was a manager. I was with my mom. Probably creepy, but He put me in touch with this woman, Ro Diamond, who is an agent here. And I call Ro Diamond off this guy had already called her and said, this girl's going to call you. I think you should meet her. It was so bizarre, Michael, how all these things sort of happened.
Wow.
I meet Ro and she's like, I can't. Well, first I have my meeting with Jeff Witches, who is so sweet, but he's also just like, you're so green. I'm not going to take you on. Come back to me in a few years.
Did you mention the Clueless series to him?
Of course I did. Which, by the way, was already cast. So that wasn't even a possibility anymore. Yeah, I'm coming into these rooms like, hi, I hear they're holding auditions. Where can I get my audition for this Clueless TV series? Anyway, I meet with Ro, who's a smaller agency. She sends me to read for a friend of hers, Fran Bascom, who is the casting director of Days of Our Lives, who has since passed. This woman calls Ro and says, you know, the scenes went well, whatever. And Ro's like, I'll represent you if you want to come out. And Ro was my agent for 10 years. Wow. She actually got me a holding deal at Warner Brothers when they gave those out.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. Like they used to hand them out, give you some money and put you on hold. Yeah. We'll find you a project.
I don't know if you can even say.
They never find you anything.
Grand, which, yeah. By the way, just to give you a clue of where my family was, that was double what my parents made in a year. 30 grand. So we were literally losing our minds. Like, what is happening? Anyway, so with the holding deal, they put me in a show, in a pilot. And meanwhile, I'm going back and forth between Louisville and LA and trying to do schoolwork or whatever. Anyway, and I do this pilot that they told me was sold for $13 on the air. So my family makes this huge decision to come to Los Angeles, only to have us learn when we got here, they decided to not go forward with the show. So now we're in LA.
You moved out to LA to do a show that got canceled before you started filming it.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there were other things at play. Like, luckily during that time, I got to do, during the back and forth time, while I was in LA, I would read for other things. And I got to do like a guest spot on something here or there. I ended up doing this movie Pleasantville. Which was like such an insane experience.
Wow.
For like 3 months.
That was a
big
movie.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was wild. Like it's so wild. I think back on the story now. Anyway, yeah, we literally packed up a Woody station wagon that was not even ours. It was my grandparents. We didn't own a car. And my brother and my mom and I drove to LA. Anyway, that's how we got here.
Inside of You is brought to you by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. This is an amazing platform. I use it on both podcasts. It has worked wonders for me. It's so amazing how easy it is to navigate. If you want to sell products, t-shirts, soap scents, whatever it is, Ryan, you want to sell, this is the way to do it. You could see what your best seller is right there, analytics, how much you're making this month, what products are selling the best. It's really fantastic. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage, Shopify's there to help you grow.
Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered.
Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star.
Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way.
Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/inside, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/inside now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/inside. Inside of You is brought to you by Netflix. Battle Creek, Michigan, 1963.
Kellogg's and Post, sworn cereal rivals, race to create a pastry that will change the face of breakfast forever. A wildly imaginative tale of ambition, betrayal, and menacing milkmen, sweetened with artificial ingredients. Unfrosted stars Jerry Seinfeld in his directorial debut. It features a supporting cast of comedy greats, including Melissa McCarthy, Jim Gaffigan, Hugh Grant, Amy Schumer, Max Greenfield, Christian Slater, Sarah Cooper, Bill Burr, and many more. Friday, May 3rd, only on Netflix.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Bleav Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Were you a star now in Louisville to the people in your high school, to people around you? Like, she's in LA. She's got a show. Did you embellish it? Come on.
No, I don't think so. There was this part of me that was almost like a little shy about it. Like, I wanted to just go home. Like, I would go back and forth. I mean, through my senior year, I got to graduate with my senior class in Louisville by doing correspondence. And so when I went home, I wanted to just be... like, I almost didn't want to talk about that all the time, even though it was the topic. It was like, no, I just want to go to the game or, you know, see my boyfriend or, you know, whatever. So it was weird. I was really, really shy about it at first.
So the show doesn't get picked up and you decide, which is crazy. You decide to stay.
We did. Yeah. Yeah. My younger brother was in high school and he found a school out here and
wait, your whole family moved from Louisville for you to Los Angeles?
Pretty much.
What? How much? I mean,
was a family decision.
That's a lot of pressure though. That's a lot of pressure. If you don't succeed, dad doesn't have the $30,000 job, $15,000 job.
There was no safety net. There was no safety.
Oh my God. They went all out for you. That is love, sweetie.
It was a lot. It was a lot on us. It was a lot of really, I remember the conversations being like, so yeah, it was a lot of love. But also I think in a way, I think all of us were looking toward a better life. And I don't even want to say that it was so bad in Louisville. It was just that there was this opportunity.
There was an excitement.
And we had struggled a lot and we'd been through a lot at that point, as a family, and my mom working, you know, three jobs just to keep us in our house. And, you know, we were on and off food stamps for a bit. Like it was a time. And so there was this, you know,
Well, what did your dad do?
My parents were divorced at that point. Right. And he stayed in Louisville. Yeah.
Oh, man.
So that was the other thing that, you know, we were all, it is just so wild to think about all of that now and how many people helped us along the way and how many. Like, I think about Roe now. I think about this holding deal from Warner Brothers now. I think about just everything that aligned for all of us to be here. It's really nuts.
Kind of a miracle.
The
chances of survival in this sound like we're going to the Arctic. The chances of survival here in Hollywood.
It is like going into the Arctic. Also, my mom was like a single mom. She was like, you know, I think I'm 40. I turned 40.
You look, by the way, not hitting on you. I'm just saying you look fantastic. I would have thought 32.
Oh, Michael.
No, you look great. Good lighting? Because you do look great.
Oh, God. Thank you so much. I feel great.
That's good. But was a divorce hard for you as a kid?
Yeah. Divorce is awful. Divorce is awful.
Yeah, I went through it too. I went through a divorce. In fact, I've been through, my sister has been divorced four times. My dad's divorced twice. My mom's divorced. Anyway, I get that. But how old were you when they split up?
12.
Well, that's got to be incredibly hard.
Yeah, it was. It's really, really hard. Divorce is just really hard. I went through one myself a few years ago, and I think as a kid, there was a sort of pressure that maybe you want to be. I know for me, I kind of wanted to be everything to both of them. I wanted to help them. That was my feeling, was like, oh, I want to help, you know, you heal, and I want to help you heal, and I want to, like, everybody's hurting. And this, yeah, it's just a really complicated, hard thing to go through. And, but also I think sometimes for the best, as hard as it is, it's not necessarily the unhappy ending. Always. Yeah.
Do you see signs as a 12-year-old? Because I saw signs when I was a kid and I was like, these people should not be together. I knew that my parents shouldn't be together. So it didn't shock me. What shocked me is that they were together as long as they were. So was your shocking, or was it dysfunctional?
Not shocking at all. I think I remember sort of thinking, like, I was surprised it hadn't happened yet. But I think there was, like, I remember they separated once when I was about 8, and I was so devastated that I don't have a ton of memory from it. I just remember, like, my brain exploded, and I remember just being so overwhelmed at that thought. And I actually think my reaction is one of the reasons that they were like, okay, we need to smooth this over for now.
You were so devastated that your parents probably got back together. That was probably the reason.
I was probably the reason that they were unhappy for 4 more years.
My God.
Yeah.
I mean, that's tough, but they both supported your endeavors. They both supported you going out to Los Angeles. And
yeah, I think for the most part, they were both always, I mean, I always felt that support. I mean, I did plays from the time I was 8 years old, and that was always the one thing. And I'm so grateful. I look back on it now. I just think about it. It's so wild when I think about my mom being my age and having, like, teenage kids and making a decision to go to Hollywood with them. It's so wild. But there was this feeling that, even in everything my family went through and the struggles that we had, that we could still do anything, like, dream big. And so I for that, I'm just incredibly grateful. Like, nothing was off limits. It's sort of that same thing.
Yeah. Do they talk still? Were they friends? Do they talk?
No.
Nothing. Yeah. Mine don't either. In fact, I always have this fear at my wedding. I'd have to have two different weddings because it'd be so uncomfortable to have them both in the same room. And I really have, my therapist is like, why are you talking? You're not even in a committed relationship, let alone married. And you're fucking worried about your wedding and your parents being there. What? This is anxiety out the ass.
I was just about to say, Michael.
I know.
That's next level anxiety. I have it too, though. I think about things like that all the time. And it's like, oh my God, wait, this isn't even a real scenario.
Do people think, because I think, you know, when I get married, it's going to be forever, and I'm not going to meet someone that I'm not going to be in love with. And then is this how you felt? Obviously, you got divorced, but, like, most people do get divorced. A lot of people, it's not like the 40s where everybody stays together because society says you should. Did you feel like this is forever? Is that how you feel when you get married?
Yeah.
It's amazing how things just can turn around so quickly, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Is it certain things you just see as you go and you go, wow, I was wrong. This wasn't as right. Maybe I had blinders on, whatever it is. What is it?
I kind of wish I knew. I guess maybe there are, in hindsight, always, I think we can connect some dots that maybe we didn't want to. And I'm not just speaking about in marriage. I would enter any relationship hoping that it's forever, right?
Yeah,
like
sure.
So it's not even just in the marriage. It's sort of, and I think that is probably just a part of our situation happened very fast. But I think in the getting to know process that, you know, we all have, I don't know. I think we discover you peel back layers and we show our, you know,
true
all
colors.
Of our sides, I guess. And I don't know. I think you just have to hope that wherever that person is on their journey and the tools they have in their toolbox, you know, that you can sync up with where you are in your journey and the tools you have in your toolbox.
Yeah.
Because it's not necessarily anybody's, I don't know. It's sort of, I don't know if that totally makes sense, but like we are just sort of where we are and we just keep growing. And I think in the growth, maybe that's where it can get a little tricky.
This is very educational for me because, you know, I always think about, oh, will I ever get married? And then, you know, I jump ahead. I'm like, well, I gotta, if someone isn't, you know, if I marry someone who doesn't have anything, which is fine. I've dated a lot of women who either don't have it together or have it together. It's mm-hmm. not about, one of us has it together. I never have it together, but financially you might say, you know, how do you ask for a prenup? And then I think here's how I would do it. I would say to the person, I think we should sign a prenup. What do you mean? So you're, no, this is because it's not that I'm worried about me falling out of love with you, but what if you fall out of love with me? Yeah. And that's more likely to happen.
That's funny. I mean, I also think at this point, I mean, we're not babies. We're not like, you know,
no.
So you've been divorced.
No,
as well.
No, I haven't. I haven't been married or anything.
You do have a lot of anxiety.
I do. My foot's shaking as I talk about this.
I just think, you know, there are realistic and honest conversations that sometimes are not so romantic, but yeah, that need to be had. And I see what, I understand what you're saying. It's sort of like not putting some weird stamp on the way you think things are going to go, but it's kind of like, I don't know, wanting to protect yourself. Removing some anxiety. It's sort of like that we do these things, right? We all
to protect ourselves.
To do that, protect to make us feel safe.
Yeah.
And it really has not a lot to do. I mean, sometimes it does maybe with the other person, but I feel like sometimes it doesn't. It mostly doesn't actually have to do with the other person, anything they've done or whatever. It's sort of our.
Well, think about this. I've worked my whole life for what I have. Now, for whatever that is, I don't think it's really asking that much for someone to say, hey, if this doesn't work out, which a lot of marriages don't work out. So if it doesn't, I don't want to lose everything that I've worked so hard for my whole life because you've decided to go cheat or you've decided to go, you fell out of love with me or my farts are just enough for you.
Mm. It's so awful. It's so heartbreaking, but I understand what you're saying. And it's true. I don't know how you grew up, but like, I'm with you. I didn't grow up with a safety net. I didn't grow up with there's some trust fund or
nope.
some other thing back there
yep.
that I can lean on or whatever that, you know, it's just me and what I provide for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And the threat of losing that is a lot. That's everything in a lot of ways. Like it's sort of I'm not saying on a material level, but just on this sort of emotional, you know, you've worked your whole life
yeah.
and you've built a certain life for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that feeling.
Was your mom the first person you went to when you were like, it's over?
I think so. No, actually, I don't think so. I think I went to my friends. I have like these like friends were like sisters. My friend Brooke and Rebecca, I think I told first. And I remember I saw, I take that back. The first person I told was my little brother.
And how did he respond?
Also a great person in a crisis. Very, very, very calm and protective. It's funny. He's my younger brother, but I think he's always had a bit more of the like older brother protective thing. We're 13 months apart. We were raised basically like twins. So yeah, he was my first phone call. I remember.
You know, marriage feels like it's something that no matter whose fault it was or whatever, you probably feel like a bit of a failure, right?
Totally.
And it's like, how do you deal with that? Like, how do you bounce back? I mean, you're resilient.
I don't know. I think everybody's, again, have their own experiences and their own journey. I think for me, it made me look at myself like hard and be like, tiptoe or timid. I feel like I have been very careful and maybe a bit more like, take your time, check in with you, make sure you're not missing anything, like in entering into other relationships or whatever. Since it just made me really look at myself. You know, it's interesting. I was in a relationship pretty much from the time I was about 22 until the time I was 36. It was like, I had this one relationship in my early 20s. I had a long relationship with Rojay, who you know.
Yep.
And then I went into this relationship that I got married. So the last, you know, 5 years, 4 years have actually been the first like time that I think I've really been just with me.
Wow. Well, how great is that? That's a blessing that in a way that it happened. You're young. You're still very young. I mean, you have at least 60 years left. You'll live to 100. Queen Elizabeth is. Yeah. But like, honestly, don't you feel like in a way you're like, hey, I'm glad this happened now so I could find my forever, you know, or maybe if there is a forever, but you took the time, all that pain and all that hurt and all those things of the introspectiveness. Mm-hmm. Is that the right word?
I like the word. I like it. Introspectiveness. That's a five-syllable word.
I think it's a word. But that probably was unbelievably healthy. It wasn't in the moment it happened and all this shit was going on, but after you got through it, you probably thought, oh my God, this was really fucking great for me.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I don't think I ever really stopped. I worked between working and between being in relationships for my whole life, it was a time to focus on me, which I think in a way was what I was being called to do anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was, I hope in for every party involved, it's good. And that there is some sort of, you know, this was,
a learning experience.
I see why this had to happen, or right. I, you know, whatever. I wish all of it well and everything, but I have been really grateful to have this time over the last few years, and honestly, in this pandemic, which is probably very weird to say because it's been such a horrible time, to sort of pause,
yeah,
and maybe look at stuff that I
enlightening. Didn't. Enlightening. It's tough to be alone. It's tough to be, I mean, you're someone who's been in relationships most of your life. And, you know, I've been single a long time. I mean, I've been in relationships, but the pandemic, as much as, you know, it's been terrible for so many people and so really bad, obviously, I say that earnestly, but, you know, for me, it's really been a time like, oh, Tom and Deneen can't come over and hang out with me. Oh, Rob, you know, so it's just, it's a tough time, but like being alone has helped me deal with my anxiety, deal with a lot of these things that have been weighing on me for a long time. And so it's been good in a bad in a good way and good in a bad way. But
I have had the exact same experience. I mean,
yeah,
having to really maybe deal with some things that I have just been, I've been working and I don't need to deal with that. And I don't need to deal with that. And it's just, you kind of, I feel like I went into like a forced, like, oh yeah, okay, we got to look at some stuff now and deal with it. Cleaned out a storage unit I had for 15 for years and years and years and years.
Why did you keep a storage facility? You're probably paying $200 a month for that thing. Really?
Wait,
That's a lot. You're spending a lot of money on storage. Why? I mean, in most of that shit, you probably forgot about. Am I right?
Yeah, I think most of that shit I didn't want to deal with or look at. It was like 15 years of life. I mean, the storage unit was like the size of a small apartment in New York. It was crazy.
Oh my God.
And I've been living in a building for the last, you know, for the last few years, or had been. And when lockdown happened, it felt crazy. It's a really fun building, but it was just not safe, and I'm completely paranoid. And I was like, all right, so I Airbnb'd for a bit. I've moved like 4 times during this last year, but this isn't my house, it's someone else's house I'm renting. But I was like, why do I still have this thing? And I hired this like really safe company to kind of help me go through it. But it was kind of that was like a symbolic, I feel like. I was like, okay, I've had a lot of shit in here. I've had a lot of shit.
Away with the old, on with the new. You know, yeah.
New beginnings.
Like, you seem like, you know, you tell me a lot of these things, but you seem really together. Like, I see that mom-like figure back in high school where you're driving your friends around and you're doing this. You've all, and maybe that's sort of like, you know, what I gather. I'm not a therapist, and boy, I need one more than ever, but I have one. He's great. She's great. I have two. But do you think maybe your whole life that you've almost been that maternal figure in a lot of ways to so many different people and been the strength that no one's really been the strength for you, and you've never really collapsed into someone's arms and really been vulnerable in a way that, you know, because I feel like in a lot of ways I'm always helping everybody else. And then it's me who's kind of like drained. It's me who's kind of like, you know, hurting at times. And I'm like, fuck, man, everybody thinks I'm just happy as a clam all the time. And I'm the light of the party and whatever. And do you get like that? Do you feel like that?
Yeah. I mean, you talk about like smiling, happy, like life of the party. I think that is something I know for me over time that I feel has become like, there's this expectation that I show up that way, which at this point in my life, I'm sure as I was younger or whatever, I just got a lot of positive feedback for being happy and smiley and nice to everybody and, right, you know, pleasy or whatever. But, you know, now I'm really, really working. I'm trying to like, to drop that. Cause I think what I'm realizing as I get older, yes, that feeling of sort of wanting to be strong and be there for other people. So I keep it together. I still have that, like, maybe there, this responsibility feeling almost of like, I can be the safety net that we didn't have. I can be the, but we're all adults. That's a lot of that is like left over, and I can drop it. It's just sort of me getting used to not thinking that way. But it's really hard for me because I feel an expectation, or maybe I've made it up in my head that I come off a certain way. I need to be a certain way to maybe be, accepted or whatever. That's just the way I'm expected to show up, that it almost sometimes is like, unless I can show up that way, I'm not going, instead of just showing up where I am. So that's my shit that I have to drop, because nobody's asking that of me.
Right.
And the people of my life, you know, now, but I think it's part of the reason, like, I have a ton of social media anxiety. I have a lot. I just, like, even I talked about sharing my life or talking, and I think a lot of it kind of comes from that.
Yeah. I asked James Rodé. I text Dulay and Rodé, that rhymed. Dulay and Rodé. So I just said, hey, anything I should say to Maggie? I'm interviewing her. She goes, no, just have fun. She probably won't get too deep or personal. Not really her jam, but she's awesome.
Yeah.
So that's what you just said. So he knows you. And then Dulay says, just seeing this, tell her I love her, I miss her, and I can't wait for us to all suck it again.
Wow.
So there was that.
Yeah, I missed
I think he was talking about the acting thing. Like, let's just suck it again. Let's rock this shit.
We say that it's a thing on site.
Oh, it is?
Suck it. Yeah.
Oh, I should know that.
Suck it again. But Yeah, Rodé knows me really well. Sorry, was that me looking like I'm tough or something?
No, do it again. Say the suck it line.
No, I'm not doing it again. Suck it. No, that was just a that was an off-the-cuff one-time thing that I cannot.
I love that. It's so cute, though.
No.
But your anxiety.
I love that Rodé said that. Wait, did you reach out to Tim? Tim would have.
Omenson, I should have done that. Tim is a magnificent guy. And boy, did you listen to the podcast with us? It was really. If you guys haven't listened to Timothy Omenson, just an amazing man, amazing story, amazing actor. You should go back and listen to that. He talks about how he had a stroke and talk about how he's a very brave man, but also just really let go and was so pure and honest. And it was beautiful. It really was.
Yeah, so. That was really good. You were so great with him.
Well, you know what? It's easy when people like yourself, you're easy to talk to. We learn a lot from this. I'm very interested in this. Like,
you're very good at it.
Well, thank you. I love doing it. So, I appreciate that. So thank you, Maggie. What do you do? Do you deal with anxiety? How do you deal with anxiety and what kind of anxiety do you get? What gives you anxiety?
Oh, everything.
This podcast gave you anxiety.
Totally. I turn down podcasts, just so you know, I don't do them. I've had people reach out, it is a big deal. And so I get very nervous about it. So I sometimes am, but I wanted to do this and you know, I've known you I haven't seen you in a long, 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 long time, but I've known you for so long and I've listened to your podcast and this was, to be honest with you, a little bit of a, just do it, Maggie, step into it, Maggie. You can do this.
I'm so glad you did.
Just so you know, it is really hard for me to talk about myself or to sort of reveal these things. But, how do I deal with anxiety? You know, I think this pandemic has really helped me. But you mean I don't take anything. I haven't gone.
Good for you. Painting gets you, it's an escape for you.
I mean, a complete and total escape. I have, years ago, a friend of mine came to stay with me for a few days. And as her parting gift, when she left me this set of acrylic paints and some brushes and a canvas. And I haven't stopped. I just love painting, but I don't share it. It's just for me. It's something I kind of do for love. I'm getting a little better at it now, but.
See, that's great that you do that. I was having art nights at my house because the worst thing in the world, I'm the worst at art. There's no question about it. I can't draw. I can't paint. I can't. And so I said, then this is, my therapist said, then this is perfect for you. It's so you don't have to be great. You go in not knowing you're not going to be great and you just enjoy it and let go.
That sounds so fun to me.
I'll invite you when this thing's over.
I love it. I'm getting more comfortable sort of sharing it, but it really was a really private, it was almost like writing in a journal for me, but it became that. And I also started taking voice lessons.
Singing?
I sing my whole life. This is another one of those things, stage fright things that happened to me later in life. So it's something I do myself. I play a little guitar. I sing. But I have really kept it to myself. I know you're in a band.
Yeah, we got to jam. Right. We got to paint.
And the thing about these voice lessons has been really interesting. It's almost been therapeutic beyond just getting me singing again. It's sort of, he always says, you're not open. We're trying to open your voice. We're trying to get your voice back. So I have been taking these voice lessons and I've been painting. And a lot of this has really, really helped to, I don't know. Maybe it's just a feeling that I'm working on something or I don't know, but it has helped me sort of channel a lot of that anxiety that I have.
Well, I love this. Is that a painting behind you that you did?
Oh, this is not mine. This is a painting Bob Dylan did.
Okay. I was
actually a gift from Rodé.
Let me see it. Is it right behind you?
Should I bring it to
you? Yeah, bring it over. Let's see. This is a gift from James Rodé Rodriguez, correct?
Let's see if I can get it
down. Oh, shit. No, she's going to break some. Oh, my God. That look behind you. That almost fell.
What's it?
That white thing.
It's fine. It's paint.
Bob Dylan painted that.
You can't see it.
Yeah, I can. I see it right now.
Here. Yeah, there you go.
I see it perfectly.
Yeah, it's a sidewalk cafe in New York.
That's great.
And when I bought my, this house years ago, not this, but a house I lived in years ago. And I fell in love with this painting. I saw it in London. And I didn't buy it, but I had told Rodé about it. And then it arrived.
Did you cry?
Yeah.
That's a nice, see, that's, a, yeah, that's sweet.
A good
that's-
gift. Good gift.
I mean, so when you're on set, do you ever get anxiety with like lines and things like that? And like, I have to be good, or you get, you know, or that's something you've been doing for so long that it probably doesn't affect you. Like that's your world.
It depends. I mean, it obviously depends on the scene, but no, I feel like that is where my anxiety leaves a little bit.
Wow.
It's weird. That feels like, I don't know, like comfort or something, work. I mean, obviously depending on the scene or what we're getting into, but like, yeah, I love working so much, that just, it's almost like a comfort zone.
Wow. Yeah. I think I've always, with work and everything, I associate it with anxiety. I have to be anxious. I have to be so disciplined. I have to be great, that it's just like, it drives me crazy to the point where I work so hard that's what happens. So I really would like to eventually let that go more and just try to enjoy it more. Like I'm trying to enjoy, like I like enjoying these podcasts, like being able to put these headphones on and just talk to someone and enjoy it and not think about, oh, and all these other external things that I can't control. It's always about things you can't control that give you anxiety, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So this is great. You're very good at this.
Are you saying I should quit acting?
No. You're a great actor as well.
What are you saying?
You've worked forever.
Well, I don't know about that. All right. This is called Shit Talking with Maggie Lawson. This is from my patrons. You can join Patreon at patreon.com/inside. It's a wonderful family. Leanne wants to ask you, this is, how did you begin your work in animal advocacy?
How did I begin it? I met Jude. Well, my gosh, it goes back to when I was 16. I volunteered at the Humane Society, even as a kid, but, I met Jude, my partner in my foundation in 2014. We both shared this dream of having a sort of animal, I guess a rescue, but more animal healing, animal therapy. And we had so many things anyway, and we just did it. We just started doing it. I mean, there's a lot more to that story of how it sort of came to be what it is now, but, yeah.
That's, you could find that on Margaret's blog on Wednesdays. No, it's not true. Jason B., was Psych really as fun to shoot as it seems from the outtakes and behind the scenes stories? Really?
And more. It was that fun and more. It was the best, the greatest experience. We had so much fun on and off screen. We partied, we played, we love each other. It's is good. We're not overstating how wonderful of an experience it is. If wow. anything, we couldn't possibly put into words how wonderful
I could never say that about anything I've done. Although I've loved everything and it's been amazing. What you just said is like an anomaly to just absolutely, oh my God, it's like we're all like loving. I mean, that's seldom. That's seldom. Jane O, what was the most useful thing you learned while working on Psych?
Oh gosh. Oh my gosh. Useful thing. Probably. For what I do, it would be, learning lines quickly, or, that's a really tough question. I learned to run on heels. but yeah, I would say it's sort of thinking on the fly. Rodé was always improvising. There was always like line changes that were happening quickly. So I think it just kept us, on our toes. And yeah, I can memorize and absorb faster because of it.
Wow.
That's not the greatest
actually that is, because that's
so many useful things, but
that's yeah. pretty useful. The fact that, you know, that's very useful when you're always on your toes and things are always changing. That would drive me crazy that things are changing so much. I like to improvise and things, but I don't know. When you're on a set like that, it seems like it warrants that whole feel. Like it just makes sense. It just is a fun, let's try this, let's try that. But Lisa H, what was it like acting with Jason Priestley on True Calling? Your episode was definitely a little different than others. Such a great concept for a show.
It was actually a really great concept for a show. I love Jason Priestley. I haven't seen him in so long. Oh man, I have known him from, it was like True Calling. Then I run into him places. Then he did Psych. And we still like through social media have like supported each other or whatever, but I loved it. I feel like that was one of the only dramas like I had done at that point in my career. There weren't that many. And he was so great. So great. I just love him. He was a hoot. We got along great.
Josh A., what was your experience working with Ashton Kutcher on 2.5 Men and then again on The Ranch?
Awesome. Ashton was so great. So great. He is like super professional, but also like he was so fun and so welcoming. And I felt, that was a crew. Like that was a bit of a crew. And I felt very welcomed into it. It was really, really nice.
Bob K., what superhero role would you enjoy taking on?
Superwoman.
Superwoman? Supergirl. Supergirl. There should
Wonder
be a,
Woman. But Wonder Woman.
Why can't there be Superwoman?
I don't know why I just went to Superwoman. Who's Superwoman?
Isn't it degrading though? Why you think in this time it's Supergirl? Why can't it be Superwoman now? They've never had a Superwoman.
I think that's what was happening. No, Wonder Woman. What the hell?
Superwoman. Is it tough? Because I've had this happen to me, and I ask. When a series like Outmatch with Jason Biggs, when it gets canceled, were you guys really disappointed? Did that bother you? Or
it is a heartbreak that it's weird. I've had shows get canceled and it's like, I could see that coming. We were done. I'm still not over it. In fact, Jason and I were just texting yesterday. It had the same feeling of like the way I think Psych felt in the beginning of like lightning striking and everything worked. So it was like, okay, this is the first time I've had that feeling again of like every single thing here works. I love him. Do you know Jason?
I've met him a couple of times. He's really sweet.
I just love him so much. I loved everybody on the show so much. And yeah, that was a news we got. I guess like last May that was very shocking. That was not what we expected to hear. So I'm still healing from that.
Yeah. You were on Smallville.
I was a long, long time ago. We didn't have any scenes.
No, we didn't have any scenes. What episode was it? Do you remember?
No, I just remember my character. I would kiss boys and through kissing them, suck the youth out of them so that I could stay young and they would age and die. And yeah, so it was great. Great, great character.
You worked with Tom, right?
Yeah, I worked with Tom. I had such a good time on that. I had such a good time. I had to do this whole prosthetic thing because I had to age in the end. I had to age and die. And I'm claustrophobic. That was one of my first experiences with something like that. It was really, really, really intense. I remember that. It was so fun though. That show was fun.
Yeah, it was. It was a long show. We had a long run. It was a good run.
Long, good run.
Maggie, this has been awesome. I really, I cherish this time I had with you and I hope we keep in touch.
Yes, we will. We absolutely will. Your art parties.
Yes, art parties. And I wish you the very best. And where can people find you on social?
Oh, my Instagram, that I'm trying to get better at using, Mags Laws Lawson. And my Twitter is my name.
All right, Maggie Lawson.
That's it. That's all I have. Is that what
Follow her. She's incredible. I know you've probably seen Psych if you haven't even seen the show. Plus, she's done tons of other shit. Pleasantville, Smallville. this has been great. Thank you again. I love you. And I'll talk to you soon. This has honestly been great.
Great. Thank you.
All right.
I'm glad. Okay.
Wow.
Bye.
I really enjoyed that episode. I enjoy the episodes because I don't listen to them.
I could do whatever I want with them.
You can do whatever you want with them.
Is what you're telling me.
Right. But then, you know, on the days that we're recording, I listen to some stuff. And again, like I said in the beginning, she's just a likable person and she really opened up. So if you guys really like the podcast, I encourage you to subscribe. Again, you can go to YouTube and go type in Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum and subscribe to the podcast. That would be great. And also, the handles are at Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, at Inside of You Pod on the Twitter. I'm on Instagram, the Michael Rosenbaum. You can get great stuff at the Inside of You merch store. Like I said, just go to the Inside of You online store or the Sunspin where you can get my band stuff. You can get the CD signed. We got vinyls coming, t-shirts, hats, lunch boxes, a bunch of great stuff. And thank you everybody for coming to the last Stage It to watch my band. I really appreciate that. I love playing music for you guys. And I love doing this podcast. So thank you, Cumulus. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Bryce. It's been a real treat. And my patrons, those patrons who give back to the podcast, they don't even need to. Just subscribing is enough, but they give a little more by going to patreon.com/insideof, becoming a patron. And there's all sorts of tiers and behind the scenes and Q&As, and you get to ask me questions and the guest questions, and you get merch, and it's a lot of fun. So thank you for that. Right now, we're going to get right into it. And we're going to shout the names out, Ryan.
Let's do it.
Let's shout the names out to all the top patrons. These are the top patrons that give the most. And they are very loved and very, I'm very appreciative of them, Ryan. Let's see if Ryan remembers any of these. Nancy.
D.
Mary.
B.
Leah.
F.
Trisha.
What? F.
Sarah.
S.
V.
V.
Little Lisa. Yukiko. Jill.
E.
Brian.
H.
Lauren.
G.
Nico.
P.
Robin.
S.
Jerry.
W.
Robert B. Jason W. Apothean. Kristen K. Amelia O. Allison O. L. Lucas M. Raj C. We got Joshua D. We got Emily S. CJP. Samantha M. Jennifer N. Jackie P. Stacy L. Carly H. Carly S. Jen S. Jamal F. Janelle B. Tabitha 272, not to be confused with
Tabitha 273.
Ashley Ryan. Kimberly E. Mike E. Eldon Supremo. Dan 99 more. Ramira. Santiago M. Sarah F. Chad W. Leanne P. Ray A. Maya P. Maddie S. Kendrick F. Ashley E. Shannon D. Matt W. Belinda.
Carlisle.
No. N. Belinda N. James R. Chris H. Dave H. Samantha S. Spider-Man Chase. Sheila.
Easton.
Sheila G.
I know it's G.
Ray H, Tabitha T, Tom N, Suzanne B, Liliana A, Michelle K, Marcus W, Hannah B, Michael S, Talia M, Andrew T, Betsy D, Claire M, Liz J, Laura L, Chad L, Rochelle or Rachel, Nathan E, and here's the last of them, Taylor K, Marion, Meg K, Janelle P, Trav L, Dan L, Diane R, Ojeda, Lorraine G, Corey M, Veronica K, Stevie Big Stevie W, Kendall T, Carol D, Sandy M, Angel M, Eric C, Rhiannon C, Stephen M, Corey K, Super Sam, Emily C, Sherry S, Coleman G, David C, Michelle A, Matt W, Liz L, Jeremy C, Andy T, and Chris E. Those are the wonderful, lovely patrons. Thank you for being my top tier patrons. Thank you for listening to the show today. We've got great shows coming up. We really sincerely do. Lot in the can. And a lot of really good information, a lot of people opening up about their darkest stuff. And, you know, I like that. So thank you, Bryce. Ryan.
Yeah.
For myself, Michael Rosenbaum, you're in the Hollywood Hills of California.
California, myself, Ryan Taylor's over here in the Hollywood, California.
We wave to the camera up there, right up there. How are you? And you guys, thank you so much. Just please be good to yourselves. Learn to appreciate yourselves, like yourselves, and be good to others. And thank you for allowing me to be inside each and every one of you. So, all right, I really appreciate you. Make sure you subscribe. Damn it.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot.
But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a three-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.